Cherub is one of Britain's best-kept secrets, an intelligence agency employing agents under 18 years old. The organization traces its roots to World War II, when French resistance children proved remarkably effective against German occupation. British spy Charles Henderson noticed this phenomenon and established Cherub with 20 British boys for undercover operations. Though Henderson died in 1946, his legacy flourished into an organization now employing over 250 young agents. Despite technological advances in espionage, Cherub's fundamental advantage remains unchanged. Adults simply never suspect children are spying on them. The series has sold over 13 million copies worldwide and counts celebrities like Emma Watson among its fans, with Netflix recently acquiring rights for a series adaptation that promises to bring this underground phenomenon into mainstream consciousness. 12-year-old James Choke's life is a complicated mess. In school, he's bored and frustrated, particularly in combined science class, where he sits next to Samantha Jennings, a teacher's pet who constantly mocks him about his obese mother. When Samantha pushes him too far one day, James snaps, accidentally cutting her face on a protruding nail during the ensuing struggle. Panicking, he shoves his teacher and flees. At home, things aren't much better. His mother, Gwen, runs a shoplifting empire from her armchair while watching daytime television. Despite their dysfunctional home life, James enjoys material excess, gaming consoles, expensive clothes, and gadgets he barely appreciates. His half-sister, Lauren, 9 years old and feisty, is his only real connection. Walking home from school, James is ambushed by Samantha's 16-year-old brother, Greg, and his friend. Greg threatens James with a knife, takes his money, slashes his clothes, and punches him hard in the stomach. This violent encounter is just the beginning of James's troubles. When he finally makes it home, he discovers his mother has died from mixing alcohol with medication. The devastating loss is compounded when he learns that while Lauren's father, Ron, James's stepfather, wants custody of her, he has no interest in taking James. Despite their daily squabbles, James worries more about Lauren being stuck with Ron than about his own uncertain future. Life can change in an instant, James reflects, as he's placed in Nebraska House, a run-down care facility that feels like a prison compared to his previous life. Yesterday I had a home and family. Today I'm alone with nothing but the clothes on my back and whatever I could salvage from my old life. Nebraska House becomes James's reluctant home, a dilapidated facility with broken pool tables and shared bathrooms. He meets Rachel, a purple-haired care worker who tries to ease his transition, but the stark reality remains. He's now a ward of the state with an uncertain future. James cleverly manages to secure his mother's hidden fortune, $43,000, by gutting a broken cassette radio and stuffing most of the cash inside while hiding smaller amounts as decoys. This resourcefulness hints at the skills that will later serve him well. His roommate Kyle, a skateboard enthusiast who becomes his first friend at Nebraska House, is amazed at James's possessions, since care home kids typically receive just 3 weekly allowance. Their friendship provides James with some comfort in his new surroundings. James begins seeing Jennifer Mitchum, a psychologist who helps him understand his violent tendencies. "You're not a bad person," she reassures him, explaining that his outbursts stem from feeling powerless in a world where adults control everything. During their sessions, James reveals his mathematical gift, instantly calculating complex problems, though he hates showing off this talent. Despite Jennifer's guidance, James falls in with the wrong crowd. Rob and his older friends, Vince, Big Paul, Little Paul, introduce him to vandalism and petty crime. The adrenaline rush of these activities temporarily distracts James from his grief, but ultimately leads to more trouble when they trick him into attempting to steal beer, resulting in his arrest. "Every choice you make shapes who you'll become," Sergeant Davies warns James at the police station. "Without better decisions, you'll spend your life in cells like this one." These words hang heavily over James, who's beginning to realize the trajectory his life is taking. On his birthday, James wakes up in an unfamiliar room that resembles a hotel, with no memory of how he got there. The last thing he remembers is being called to Jennifer Mitchum's office at Nebraska House. Finding himself naked, he discovers clean clothes laid out, military-style trousers, an orange t-shirt with a cherub logo, showing a winged baby sitting on a globe, and new boots. When James tries speaking to other kids in the hallway, they all respond with, "Can't talk to Orange." The one girl silently points him toward the elevator. This mysterious beginning marks James's introduction to Cherub, a secret intelligence organization that recruits orphan children with exceptional potential. James faces a series of challenging tests at Cherub. After being humiliated by Bruce in martial arts, James takes an intelligence test while injured. Next comes a chicken-killing test, where James eventually complies when offered money. Then there's a terrifying obstacle course 20 meters above ground, culminating in a jump through tree branches onto a crash mat. For the final test, James must retrieve a brick from a swimming pool, but admits he can't swim and refuses to try. Surprisingly, Mac, the Cherub chairman, reveals James passed most tests, showing good judgment in the martial arts test by giving up when necessary, scoring well on intelligence, adequately on the chicken test by making a decision despite being bullied into it, showing courage on the obstacle course, and demonstrating good judgment by not attempting the swimming test beyond his abilities. "We're not looking for heroes," Mac explains. "We're looking for agents who can make smart decisions under pressure." He offers James a place at Cherub, giving him 2 days to decide. After accepting the offer to join Cherub, James meets with Merrill Spencer to choose a new surname. After considering options, he selects Adams after Arsenal player Tony Adams, becoming James Robert Anthony Adams. This symbolic rebirth marks the beginning of his transformation from troubled teen to potential agent. James learns that Cherub operates with a color-coded t-shirt system: orange for guests, red for younger kids, pale blue for trainees, gray for qualified agents, navy for outstanding mission performance, black for exceptional agents, and white for staff. His goal is to progress through these ranks, starting with basic training. Before training begins, James must overcome his fear of water and learn to swim 50 meters. His instructor, Amy Collins, discovers James is terrified of water after he panics during his first jump into the pool. She comforts him, promising they'll work through his fear together. Meanwhile, a German doctor examines James and criticizes his fitness, calling him fat and unfit, something James had never considered before. The doctor prescribes a running regimen and dietary restrictions, beginning James's physical transformation. James struggles with his running regimen, having to complete 15 laps, 6 kilometers, 5 times a week. After initially racing off and collapsing after 3 laps, Merrill Spencer teaches him proper warm-up techniques and a gradual approach. This methodical training represents James's broader journey from impulsive reactions to disciplined responses. "Physical transformation is just the beginning," Merrill tells him. "The real change happens in your mind, learning patience, discipline, and perseverance." These words prove prophetic as James faces the grueling challenges ahead. Basic training at Cherub is designed to break recruits down before building them up. James wakes late for his first day, discovering someone stole his alarm clock during the night. He finds assigned clothes with white number 7s on them, deliberately filthy and torn. His first taste of the psychological warfare to come. Mr. Large, the intimidating head instructor with his assistants Mr. Speaks and Miss Smoke, mockingly welcomes James before forcing him to stand on one leg with a bucket over his head while outlining the brutal 100-day training schedule: 5:45 wake-up, assault courses, physical training, specialized classes, and minimal rest. James is paired with Carrie, an 11-year-old girl with shaved hair who previously attempted basic training but failed after breaking her kneecap. Carrie offers to help James navigate training if he'll protect her injured knee. She shares vital tips about the assault course and even splits a hidden Mars bar with him, warning that the instructors deliberately create situations to make trainees hate each other. By day 29 of basic training, only 6 trainees remain. After Large forces them to watch others enjoying Christmas dinner through windows, Bruce calls him a sad old creep. Enraged, Large sends the trainees back to the assault course while presumably enjoying Christmas lunch in his heated office. During the assault course, James deliberately steps on Carrie's hand, triggering a fight where they exchange blows. When Large discovers them fighting, he sends both to the medical center for treatment. After they enjoy brief warmth and comfort there, Large punishes them by forcing them to strip to their underwear and spend the night outside in freezing temperatures. This cruel punishment reveals Large's true intention. He had bet Mr. Speaks 50 pounds that no trainee would quit on Christmas Day, and specifically targeted James and Carrie, hoping to break them. Their survival through the night demonstrates their extraordinary resilience and growing bond. Sometimes the greatest strength comes from enduring what seems impossible, Carrie tells James as they huddle together for warmth. This isn't just about physical toughness, it's about mental fortitude. The 6 remaining trainees fly business class to Malaysia for their final basic training days. James revels in the luxury after 13 grueling weeks, enjoying the comfortable seats, entertainment systems, and proper food. This brief respite allows him to reflect on how far he's come. Looking in the mirror at the hotel, James is impressed by his transformed physique, his belly gone, replaced by muscle. The physical change mirrors his internal development from an impulsive, angry boy to a disciplined, strategic thinker. For their final challenge, James and Carrie must navigate through the Malaysian jungle to a series of checkpoints. They sort through their supplies, discarding heavy items and following the coastline to the river mouth before walking upstream to their first checkpoint. Walking in the jungle shade, they battle insects. Carrie suffers a painful millipede bite, while taking hourly breaks to collect coconuts and cool off in the sea. They carefully manage mosquito risks by changing into dry clothes and applying repellent after each dip, demonstrating their growing tactical awareness. When thirst becomes unbearable, they wait for the inevitable tropical storm, collecting rainwater in an inflated pool. They reach the checkpoint with an hour to spare, finding a boat with supplies and a large snake. After Carrie kills it with a machete, James prepares it for dinner, showing how far he's come from the squeamish boy who struggled with the chicken-killing test. Their journey culminates in what's presented as the ultimate test, enduring jellyfish poison pain for an hour. With their eyes masked and ankles tied to chairs, each must place their hands in buckets containing jellyfish, whose poison supposedly causes unbearable pain. They're warned that using the provided antidote means failing the entire course. As time passes with no pain developing, Carrie and Gabrielle realize it's a trick. When they remove their masks, they discover harmless white squids instead of jellyfish. Under each chair, they find gray cherub t-shirts. They've passed basic training. Even Mr. Large congratulates James, acknowledging how well he and Carrie work together. In perhaps the most emotional moment of James's journey, he discovers his sister Lauren has also become a cherub agent. A revelation that leaves him momentarily speechless in the corridor outside her Spanish classroom. Without thinking twice, James bursts into the room, interrupting the lesson as tears stream down his face. Lauren drops her textbook and runs to embrace him, their reunion drawing curious stares from other students who had no idea they were siblings. Through tears and broken sentences, Lauren reveals the full story of what happened after James left. Ron's violence had escalated. Not content with verbal abuse, he had struck her repeatedly, leaving her with severe bruising around both eyes. Gathering her courage, Lauren had shown her injuries to her teacher, Mrs. Wilkins, who immediately contacted authorities. When police searched Ron's flat, they discovered not just the cigarette smuggling operation, but also a substantial cache of Class A drugs hidden in the walls. The evidence was overwhelming, leading to Ron's 9-year sentence at Belmarsh Prison. Lauren's path to Cherub proved different from her brother's. After a brief stay at Nebraska House, where she refused to unpack her bags, convinced it was temporary, she awoke one morning on Cherub campus. Being younger, she bypassed the rigorous entrance examinations James had faced, but Cherub hasn't been easy for her. She's enrolled in an intensive physical conditioning program designed specifically for younger recruits, preparing her body and mind for the notorious basic training that awaits when she turns 10. James finds himself experiencing a complex mix of emotions: joy at reuniting with Lauren, guilt over leaving her behind, and pride in her resilience. "We lost our mother, but we found each other again," James tells Lauren during one of their many catch-up sessions. "And now we have a new family, a purpose bigger than ourselves." The academic challenges at Cherub test James daily. The mixed-age class structure proves particularly demanding. He tackles advanced calculus alongside 15-year-olds while struggling through basic Russian phrases with 10-year-olds. The contrast is especially stark in self-defense classes, where his size advantage is offset by younger students' superior technique and experience. Cherub's strict disciplinary system catches him off guard. One afternoon of muttered profanity in history class results in 6 hours of repainting parking lines under the hot sun, leaving his hands raw and blistered. Despite these initial hurdles, James gradually finds his footing in this new world. The intensive daily physical education sessions becomes his favorite outlet, particularly after his enhanced post-training fitness levels kick in. The boys versus girls competitions grow legendary, with both sides refusing to concede even the smallest victory in activities ranging from obstacle courses to martial arts sparring. Every evening, without fail, James visits Lauren in the junior block, helping with her homework or simply sharing stories about their day. Their shared past and present create an unbreakable bond, stronger now in their extraordinary new life than ever before. 2 months after training, James feels left behind as his friends depart on missions. Only Amy remains, spending hours in mission preparation while continuing to coach James in swimming. During their final swimming lesson, Amy reveals she had deliberately suspended James from mission activity because she needed him specifically for a mission where they would pose as siblings. James meets mission controller Ewart Asker, who explains this unusually complex first mission was selected because they needed a 12-year-old boy who could pass as Amy's brother. The mission concerns Fort Harmony, a hippie settlement established in 1967 on Cradle Common in Wales, and potential terrorist activity connected to the upcoming Petrocon 2004 oil industry conference. Under his cover identity as Ross Lee, James's mission is to mingle with the children, gather gossip, and report suspicious activities. Amy, posing as his sister Courtney, will befriend Scargill Dunn, the 17-year-old grandson of Fort Harmony's founder. Life at Fort Harmony proves challenging for James. After an uncomfortable first night in their newly built extension, he wakes at 3 a.m. needing the toilet, only to end up peeing on a chicken in the dark and falling in mud. The next morning brings his weekly shower, a lukewarm communal affair that ends with freezing rainwater when the hot water runs out. Despite these discomforts, James connects with various residents, including 3-year-old Gregory Evans, son of Bungle and Eleanor, potential Help Earth associates. Bungle lectures James about wearing corporate-branded clothing and gives him the book No Logo, while his heavily pregnant partner Eleanor expresses exhaustion with their primitive living conditions. "Sometimes the most valuable intelligence comes from the most unlikely sources," Ewart had told James during training. This proves true when James's friendship with young Gregory provides access to Bungle's hut, where he discovers crucial evidence. James's mission becomes complicated when he meets Joanna, the daughter of local police sergeant Ribble. Despite her father's warnings, James and Joanna develop feelings for each other, adding emotional complexity to his undercover work. Meanwhile, James faces bullying at the local school, but uses it to his advantage by getting suspended, giving him more time to investigate Fort Harmony. His growing friendship with Sebastian and Clark Dunn provides insights into the community's dynamics and the environmental activism that drives many residents. The mission takes a dangerous turn when James discovers World and Scargill using silent electric radio-controlled cars near an entrance to the old tunnels. After breaking into their workshop, James photographs shelves of radio-controlled cars, a workbench, and an orange plastic tub. Later, Amy follows Fire to Greenbrook and discovers they're using the cars to smuggle items through a tiny gap in the security fence, bypassing the strict security measures at the conference hall. What they initially believe is bomb building turns out to be something far more sinister, a bioweapon. James unknowingly exposes himself by opening the orange disposal box containing contaminated gloves and masks. Even with immediate treatment, James faces a 50% chance of death from anthrax exposure. After hours of agony and waiting at a military hospital, James receives the news that he tested positive. However, in a twist of relief, he later learns the anthrax wasn't deadly. It was an attenuated strain used in vaccines. Bungle's plan was to vaccinate regular workers at the conference center with this harmless strain through the air conditioning, then release the lethal strain during the Petricon conference so only delegates would be affected. The most dangerous weapons aren't always the ones that make the loudest noise, Eward explains to James. Sometimes they're invisible, silent, and by the time you know they're there, it's too late. As police raid Fort Harmony with riot gear, James witnesses the community's destruction. Sebastian stabs an officer in the leg with his hunting knife when they try to remove him from a van, escalating the situation into violence. James and Clark are ordered to evacuate while Sebastian is arrested. The raid leaves James conflicted about his role in the mission. While he helped prevent a potential terrorist attack that could have killed thousands, he also contributed to destroying a community where many good people lived. This moral ambiguity represents a crucial growth moment for James, who begins to understand the complex ethical landscape of intelligence work. Sometimes there are no perfect solutions, Mac tells James during their debriefing. While oil companies do have terrible environmental and human rights records, terrorism isn't the answer. Our job is to prevent violence while acknowledging the legitimate grievances that drive it. Mac classifies James's performance as outstanding and awards him a Navy Cherub t-shirt, an exceptional achievement for a first mission. The next morning, James wears his new shirt to breakfast, where his friends are stunned by his accomplishment, especially Carrie, whose mouth was open so wide you could have shoved a tennis ball in it without touching a tooth. Lauren hugs her brother proudly, while James can't help smiling at their reactions. This moment of recognition represents not just professional achievement, but personal transformation. From a troubled, directionless boy to a valued member of an elite organization. It was beautiful, James reflects, savoring not just the recognition, but how far he's come from that angry boy in science class who couldn't control his temper. Now, he's someone who can maintain his cover under pressure, make strategic decisions, and complete complex missions while navigating moral ambiguity. James's story is just beginning. As he prepares for his second mission, he's earned his karate black belt and established himself as a promising agent. Meanwhile, Lauren starts basic training soon, following in her brother's footsteps. The epilogue provides updates on all characters. Uncle Ron is in prison until 2012. Gladys Dunn bought a Spanish farm where she lives with Joshua and 30 former Fort Harmony residents. Fire and World received 25-year sentences. Scargill got 4 years, and Joanna has a new boyfriend, a bittersweet reminder of the personal connections James had to sacrifice for his mission. Cherub's history stretches back to 1941, when Charles Henderson first recognized the potential of children in intelligence operations. Since then, the organization has evolved significantly, admitting girls in 1956, implementing the colored t-shirt system in 1957, and expanding its campus into a secure facility by 1990. Four agents have died in service since inception, a sobering reminder of the real dangers these young people face despite their exceptional training. The 1996 50th anniversary celebration brought together 900 former agents, including a former prime minister and a famous rock guitarist, highlighting the diverse paths Cherub graduates take after their service. As James embarks on his next mission with Bruce, attempting to rescue 2 8-year-old hostages, the cycle continues. New challenges await, new skills will be tested, and James's transformation from troubled teen to elite agent will progress further. In Cherub, we don't just change who we pretend to be, James reflects, we change who we actually are. This fundamental transformation, from reactive to proactive, from impulsive to strategic, from isolated to connected, represents the heart of James's journey and the enduring appeal of the Cherub series.